BRS meeting, September the 11th, 2017. Yes, Mr. Chair, we have one member of the public.
But Jim Hammond is, you're about the bus stop, right?
Yes.
So, well, why don't we wait until Jim Hammond is here? Just hold on for a second. We'll come back to you.
Thank you.
So, same time, why don't we go to the bus stop before? But we're going to come back to public comments, Mr. Chairman, because the customers, I should have my kids.
Customer has a specific question related to bus stops, and Jim Hammery of Bus Planning is going to be here shortly, and we would rather him speak directly when Mr. Hammery is here. So if you all don't mind, if we go to the ombudsman report, that can move forward.
And don't mind at all. Mr. Hammery is not here. Last week, it was the trip planner was application.
And they are here. Our presentation speakers for that are here.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I can barely hear you, so if there's any way you could speak up more, it would be very helpful to me. I don't have anything left from July. The only thing I will update you on the progress of is our beacon project. We are installing the remaining beacons in Gallery Place this week, and we should have them all up and running and in testing by the end of this month. And we'll be asking people to volunteer this fall to come in and help us do the beta testing and give us feedback and comments and do some focus groups with us. So those of you who are interested in participating in that, please let me know so she can put your names to me and as well as the others from the community that will be working with us to get feedback on this so we can really get it fine-tuned by the time we implement it in the remaining six stations. And we're doing well on mapping out the other six stations. We've done most of them on rough draft at least. Only ones left, I think, are Long Font and part of Fort Totten. So we're doing pretty well on that. And we, so far, we're on schedule for March 1st of next year for completion. So any questions from the committee? Yes, Phil?
Yes. This is for the whole committee. The last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of track work done on the orange, blue, silver, and red lines. And a lot of silver, single tracking has gone along with that. And what has happened on the single track side is they shut off the PIDs. So the trains are running every 24 minutes, or if you're lucky, twice an hour. And you have no idea when they're coming or which ones are coming. Because they're single tracking on orange, blue, and silver. So we had a situation last weekend at Metro Center where the PID on one side of the track heading towards Franconia, Springfield, Wheeling, Reston, and Vienna was working on the other side of the track heading to New Carrollton and Largo. There was nothing, it was a blank screen. And so you didn't know how long you were going to be sitting there, and you didn't know what was coming when it did come. And the app didn't work.
And you're saying the API was out too?
Yeah, the app works directly off what's on screen. And so because that didn't work, the app didn't work.
Now, well, it doesn't work that way, actually. The app doesn't work off the PIDs. The PIDs and the apps work off of our data stream from the API that comes out of here.
Okay, so the app did work. Now, the one thing that did work was the trip plan.
Okay.
So if you said when you wanted to arrive at your location, then it would tell you when to pick up your train, you know, when you got there. But that's pretty clumsy and cumbersome to do that. And I thought maybe we could find out why they weren't doing that, particularly Metro Center, because that wasn't where the single tracking was. The single tracking was between East Falls Church and Claremont.
Got it. Okay.
This was beyond it. It was just Metro Center that you turned on. My other
so this is a good purpose so that the trip planner work, but the trip planner has the scheduled times, not the actual.
Exactly. So the trip planner work, but PID did not work. The other thing is the wall signs downstairs at Rosslyn are still completely covered in stuff. And they're
which signs?
The wall signs. The ones that are on the track wall. That's
okay.
How it's Rosslyn and where it's going.
The lower level?
Yeah, on the lower level. It's been a couple of years now.
All right.
And it was interesting because Metro Center signs had the same problem, and we mentioned that at our meeting, and 2 weeks later they cleaned them. But I guess Rosslyn is not as popular as...
It's not. Okay. We'll talk into that, yeah.
And then the third thing that Mr. Blake knows about is the 7,000 series cars. Instead of having the no bicycles at the center doors sign on the door itself, actually has it down on the side of the vehicle. And the problem is, you don't see it. And if somebody does bring a bicycle on, you can't point to the door and say, see, you're not supposed to be here. You have to tell them, please get off the train and take a look at the buses. And that's not effective. So anyway, those are something for you to do in case you're bored.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else have anything? All right. Well, thank you very much. You know how to reach me if you have anything. Thanks.
I'm just curious, Bill. Which app were you using specifically that wasn't working?
I use DC Rider. DC Rider.
DC Rider. I'm not sure how reliable it is, but I have to check and make sure.
Yeah, it works really, well.
Okay, so next one on the agenda is the public comment period.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, hi, my name is Dan Stevens, and I'm here on behalf of my daughter Frances, and trying to get Metro to put a bus stop in. And the issue is that Frances on Hampshire Avenue.
Yeah, I'm familiar with your request.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Should I stop here?
Unfortunately, you're talking to the wrong audience, but you're welcome to inform everybody what your request is.
They mostly know.
Okay.
But what should I do?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few people that don't know.
Yeah.
So Francis rides horses at Woodland Horse Center. And the Z2 passes right by Woodland Horse Center. And there is no stop there. There is a stop south of 198. But 198 is a very busy road, and especially out there, cars are going extremely fast in both directions across that intersection. And so I'm wondering how to get Metro to put a bus stop on the other side, north side of the intersection. Bless you. I have a little map if anybody wants to see it.
Yeah, it's one of those. I'm Jim Hamry, by the way. I'm the director of service planning. And include bus stops for Metro Bus. And so we had actually looked at that request when we did the Z-Line study a couple years ago. And the county and the State Highway Administration, who owns the right-of-way for those roads, had concluded that they wanted to have only one stop in that area, not two. And that one stop was on the wrong side for your
wrong side
of the street. And I think the next signalized crossing is actually several hundred feet down the way from the riding stable where you're at.
You mean the next signal north?
Yeah, the next stop.
The next stop north is a little less than a quarter of a mile, but there's no shoulder there anyway.
And so we had recommended to Montgomery County that we thought it was relatively easy to accommodate by, because it's in one direction that you need the bus stop, you don't need it in both. And so we had recommended implementing it. Now, we're not the owner of the property, so we don't get the final decision. The county determined after review that they didn't want to have a second stop there. And so we have had to defer to the county's decision on that. And that was my recommendation to you, was to talk to the county. Now, we did get correspondence from one of the county, council members. And they wrote us asking us to implement a stop. And our response was, go talk to you, Montgomery County DOT. It's their decision as to whether to put a stop there. And the reason it's a big deal is it's not just a pole and flag, but it needs the 5x8 landing pad to have to be an accessible stop. And we can only serve accessible stops now by policy. And so if the property owner or somebody wanted to build a 5x8 stop with a hard surface connection to the corner, we'd be happy to serve them. We don't really see this being a degradation of service or the creation of an unsustainable policy. I think it's a relatively unique situation, and we'd be happy to support you.
The correspondence I received was a letter from Mr. Hucker's office that said it was up to WMATA, and I can give you their email. their decision that it was about merging traffic, basically. They don't want to put a bus stop in there because they don't want the buses to merge. And I can show you the email, and I've seen buses merge much more serious merging than that.
Well, if you don't merge, we're gone.
Yeah, they have to merge there because south of the intersections, it's two lanes. North goes down to one lane. So,
yeah,
but
that was not an excuse we made.
That's the excuse they're making now. So that's why I'm saying everything keeps changing. And I don't know. It sounds to me like they just don't want to build a bus stop.
That's a true statement, and that's really the foundation of this issue, is the cost of installing an accessible stop.
And is that not offset by the cost of metro access? Part of it is to transition off of metro access onto the bus system. That's where Francis is right now.
In that case, probably not.
Jim, can I ask you a question?
Sure. I remember way back when we had that grant to put in bus stops, and Montgomery County said they didn't need the money and they donated 2 bus stops to TT County. And I wonder if they had that much money to do bus stops, that we could remind them that they gave away 2 bus stops to Prince George's County. If there's money left in that grant, or just a little bit of guilt.
Well, Montgomery County has the most evolved and progressive bus stop program in the region. They've done, several thousand bus stop improvements, and frankly, I'd like to get our own program up to the standards that they have. So I don't think it's availability of money that's the issue. I think it's a heartfelt policy and programmatic decision that they're trying to make. And in the conversations we've had with them, that was, there is a stop, they don't need a second stop. That was sort of their approach to responding.
Can they state that the one they have is better than the one that they would have if they moved it to save us some metro access money and possibly a person with a disability stepping out and being a bit injured?
Well, the other stop alternative actually has more ridership than this one would generate. So
you need two.
So you would need to leave the existing one in place and add this. But I think this is one of those cases where it's an easy accommodation and it's only used once a day at best. So, we spent a lot of effort trying to reduce bus stops, the number of bus stops, the necessary bus stops, and so this sort of kind of crossways into that dialogue.
There are other children who use bus stops. So there are other kids who do ride at the stables. They currently are crossing 198 and 650 to southbound to their home. So it's not just for Francis, but it's for other kids.
Hi, I'm Herb Trigger. I'm the Alexandria guy. And I'd just like some clarification. So are you saying that if Montgomery County, and I'm looking over you, Chino, were willing to put in a bus stop at, build a bus stop, put it at location 3, then Metro would be willing to stop its buses there?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Chino,
you're on.
Well, the material that was just handed out is from the Deputy Chief of Staff to the council member who holds jurisdiction of that area. And apparently, this Deputy Chief of Staff reports that he got from the VMATA information that suggests it would be a danger to place a bus stop there. I don't know, sir, if you're familiar with it, but
it's a
long time.
Yeah, I'm the one that wrote the response, and that's not what my response said. So I'm not exactly sure why they're...
Well, apparently, this deputy chief of staff was reporting WMATA's response, and he says, a bus serving a bus stop in this environment would result in a traffic hazard. And then he goes into other details, so...
I take issue with that. I think a stop can be located appropriately. It won't be any more of a hazard than the other stops in that area. But the C2 has been a sensitive route because the high school up the way also wanted some special treatments, and that wasn't granted. So this may be their way of trying to be consistent. I've not talked to this individual directly, but we did receive the inquiry and we wrote the response.
So it sounds like it is. Okay. Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask what topic we were on, because I didn't hear earlier when people were discussing what the assistant was saying.
So we were discussing a public comment that was about a bus stop being put in. Yes.
All right.
And if I were Mr. Stevens walking out of here tonight, I would be very frustrated because he doesn't have an answer. But the answer, and I realize I can be very smug about this because I'm the new guy in Alexandria. We own our own roads, so we can put a bus stop wherever we want to put a bus stop. And as opposed to my neighbor next to me in Arlington, where the roads are owned by the county and the state, and so it's harder to put a bus stop.
Well, not as agreeable.
Yeah,
never go wrong. It's what the state,
county. Right.
You have to really think about what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, Mono, they get the approval, we'll put it in.
I've had no feelings with the state, with city government.
We've tried to assist. Okay.
Can I ask where in Montgomery County? I lived in Montgomery County for a very long time. Are you comfortable with that?
The map shows that it's on New Hampshire Avenue.
Okay.
198. And it's dangerous because of New Hampshire Avenue. Crossing New Hampshire Avenue, what? I mean, wouldn't they want to prevent bus drivers from having to do something like that? Particularly those with disabilities. New Hampshire Avenue is a large road.
Well, it's not WMATA's call.
Is this by Blair?
Pardon?
Is this by Blair?
No. I think it's much more than that.
Okay.
George, the question is, the county only wants one bus stop in that area. There is already one bus stop in the southern direction, and this is a request for a bus stop in the northern direction by an activity center.
And that makes sense to me, that's what I'm saying, because if the bus is going in for a loop or something, and there's only one bus stop there, having to cross the thoroughfare like New Hampshire Avenue, if that is a concern of the customer, the patron, I go with it, because, I know in everyday experience what it's like.
And if I may say, Mr. Chairman, and with respect to Mr. Trader, I know you say he's a little frustrated because he doesn't have any answers, but I think he does have answers, if I may, respectfully say. Because I think last week when you brought it up, even before the key bus stop person was here, I said that the real key in this case would be the local government.
Right.
Because we do not, as Metro, own these bus stops. And while there may have been some confusion as to what Mr. Hamry reported back to the council member's office based on the letter he received, I think Mr. Hamry pretty much cleared it up.
Yeah.
He said if the county puts in a stop, Metro Bus will serve. So I think the answer is to go back to the representative, say you heard from Metro directly, they would serve a stop, but it's not Metro's decision to put in a stop on either county or private property. So I would say that's where the decision and the direction is, the council office, as well as the Department of Transportation.
Would Metro pay for it?
No, sir. No, that's not, well, I can't speak of it, but that's generally not what, we pay for bus stops, if I'm not mistaken, and he's the expert on that, that are on Metro property. We serve the stops that we agree to serve, but we pay for stops on Metro property. But am I correct on that, sir?
That is correct. We don't have any funding at the moment for improving bus stops in Montgomery County. As mentioned, there's a grant we're working with Prince George's. That is something we started 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So I don't have a program that can readily go put in a stop in Montgomery. That really is up to the jurisdiction of the SHA, the State Highway Administration.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. How much does the bus stop cost?
How much does the bus stop cost?
Yeah.
The construction?
No, this one, because of the need to grandfather pavement conditions, I think there's some drainage issues there, it's probably could be $25,000 or $40,000 all told to make a fully compliant engineering certified bus stop.
There's no sidewalk or crosswalk on the other side.
That's correct.
Please use the mic.
He says there's no sidewalk to connect, and so that would need to be part of the stop.
Well, I would like to offer Mr. Stevens the advice at the top of Sean Brandon.
Not there. I mean, there is close to $1 million available right now in Montgomery County for transportation. Helping out with transportation for persons with disabilities, given the fact that Uber and Lyft are paying 25 cents a ride, every ride out there towards that lot.
Well, the fact would be that he still would have to get approval through the local government.
She is a local government.
Could I suggest, because I do see the point, and thank you, Mr. Price, that I think for the activity center to initiate would be a good thing, because they represent many constituents, and to initiate with both Montgomery County officials and County Council, and perhaps even talk to their local members of the House of Delegates, but that while at the same time as in doing that, that check into whether Montgomery County, like Fairfax County, has either in Fairfax County we have a ADA fund for making all Title II ADA facilities accessible, you know, accessibility improvements is what I'm trying to say. Well, we also have a separate line looking for bus stops, and you know, it's not enough to get all of them at any one time. And there's a gap in that anyway, but it seems to me if there is an ADA fund, or even better still, an ADA bus stop improvement fund, that that's where some money could come from the county for a bus stop. We only advise the regular WMATA boards, so can we advise the WMATA board members from Montgomery County of the and or Montgomery PG about the criticalness of this motion?
Well, just to pick up on what Charlie said, I know that Sean Brennan and her group is having a meeting Wednesday, and I would suggest that that our guest attend the meeting and bring it to the attention of Sean Brennan, who is part of Montgomery County government. Her group is an advisory committee working with her, and explain what he's learned from this meeting, which is that WMATA is not necessarily opposed to building or serving a bus stop if the county would provide the means for a bus stop to be built at that location. Now, I can't speak for her, or any of us can't speak for her or the county, but you may have to take another step and go and talk to them. And I will be there at that meeting. If you're not there, I'll try and bring up your viewpoint.
Do you know, sorry, when and where it is? When and where?
It's at the senior center. I'll give it to you later. I don't have it on me.
You have my email address.
Yes, it's Daniel Stevens. Right, Dan Stevens. Okay. I'll send you the address.
It's Holiday Park or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's called the Holiday Senior Center. Not far from Connecticut Avenue. I've never been there myself, but I intend to go Wednesday. The meeting, I think, is at 6:30.
What?
The meeting of Sean Brennan's meeting is at 6:30.
Oh, it's 20 afternoon.
Oh, you're wrong, I'm sorry. It's at 1:30.
Okay, thank you for your help. Next on the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask you please, I have two comments to do. I'm not sure if this is something that I can do right now in terms of writing the metro, and I have two comments about that, or should I wait until the end?
Your comments on writing the
metro? Yes, two observations I want to make about writing the metro during the last weeks. May I do that now? Okay, thank you. Well, the first comment that I would like to do is I see that on the agenda is scheduled to have a report of maintenance about the escalator and the elevators for October the 10th. And I just want to request that on that report, if they can explain to us how the escalators really work. Because when I have used the escalator during the last 2 months, twice I was riding the escalator going down, and suddenly the escalator stopped. I almost fell twice. Fortunately, there were people in front of me, otherwise it could have been really bad. So I just want to know, what are the issues that the escalators stop suddenly? It's because the riders are doing something against the escalator on the side, I don't know. Or it's because someone is using a stroller and hit the escalators on the side. That is not clear. And if there is something that the riders should to learn about how to use the escalator, we should to know that. Because, again, suddenly the escalator has stopped twice in 2 months. That is a lot for everyone. And the second comment is that I have seen when riding the metro, the back to good report through the screens inside the 7000 series metro. It is really cool, it's really nice, interesting, and diverse, and it really feels and seems really nice. I'm just missing something about the improvement that Metro has done with accessibility. There is nothing about that. They say the report about escalators, 96% efficiency, et cetera, et cetera, about safety, about maintenance. I mean, all those are pretty much good things. But it would be interesting to see something kind of quote-unquote propaganda or something in that also video clip about the improvement that Metro has done with getting accessibility to other folks. Just a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, along the escalator line, and you guys know about it, for the last two meetings, the escalators and the elevators have been out at Judiciary Square on the Claremont side. So you either have to get off at Gallery Place or go to Union Station and come back. And I know we had that problem at Union Station a couple of years back where they shut down the escalators and the elevators in the same station, and they said they weren't ever going to do that again. Well, they've done it again.
I would think if an escalator had that mobile stop like that, that something should be explained to somebody. That's my personal opinion.
Well, again, if there is something that the rider is doing to make the escalator stop suddenly, we should know how to really ride the escalator or use the escalator. Because again, suddenly the escalator is stopped and we are in the middle of the escalator and going down again, I almost fell on that because there were two people in front of me that they just stopped me. So it's a really dangerous situation and I would like to have an explanation how the escalator really works. I know that they do maintenance and they have reports, etc., but how the escalator really works.
Well, if you're having that problem with escalators as a problem, possible there's any trouble that could be caused by using the elevator for that particular station.
Chair, can I say that this harbingers back to the accident that you might remember something on there that we had a lot of fun. I think the big question for me is whether it is a failing of the escalator systems that you would never know when it was going to happen. And believe you me, when I get on an escalator going down in Roslyn, I'm kind of the terror that could happen. So, and it might be the best place for me to get on at a particular time, because when the bus is coming to Roslyn, it's you're nearest the escalator.
Well, I understand that, but we're on an escalator, especially if you're balance is compromised because your disability that you're in a worse situation rather than if you were in an elevator if you're stopped.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But the thing is that what I recall from the accounts about what happened at
had that experience at Roslyn where it slammed on the brakes and three people in front of me went tumbling down. And if you say, hold on, that's all they can do. The three times it's happened to me, twice it's been repair people shutting it off without checking to see if anybody was on the escalator. And then the other time at Roslyn, it just did it on its own, either because you triggered a weight issue, there was too much weight on the escalator, or somebody got something stuck in the side because of people that bring baby carriages and large amounts of luggage that they're not supposed to have on there, or construction workers that are bringing construction equipment down the escalator. And so it does happen. And
well, precisely, Mr. Philip, you have named, or you have mentioned a few reasons. I think that is what mentors should do. Mm-hmm. Identify what are the triggers and really, really be clear and have something in place so we can educate riders. Don't do this, because if you do this, this is going to happen with the escalator. the escalator are not superpowered, etc., etc. You know where my point is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we need to identify that.
And they also have a right to be asked to hold on when you're on the escalator, which I haven't heard that announcement in a long time. It's a better announcement than move to the center of the car. More valuable.
Right, you know, the people, some of the people who held on also were injured with their hands.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And next, let's go back to Mr. Hamry on the state of update on the state of good operation of the Metro bus, whenever you're ready.
All right. Just taking a picture of the bus stop up at the Woodford Horse Center, followed by the compensation staff. Good afternoon, everyone. My purpose here, first of all, I'm Jim Hamry. I'm the director of the Office of Bus Planning and Scheduling, and I'm here this afternoon to tell you about our annual State of Good Operations public hearing and the proposals that it includes. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have about the proposals. The purpose of the presentation is, and this whole process, is to gather input from our customers and our stakeholders and involve citizens such as yourself about the issues that Metrobus faces and what we need to do to improve the operation of the services that we run. This whole process is done separate from the budget process because this is about making sure we're going around the right place, the right blocks, and have the right frequency that we're dealing with the issues that we face. So in summary, there's and this needs to be balanced in terms of budget. So there are some eliminations and there'll be some adds, and the goal is to do the right thing and do it in the right way. Part of that is identifying where the recommendations come from. There's a long process that we go through with corridor studies and service evaluations and local processes to come up with recommendations. We do ongoing service evaluations. We monitor crowding. We monitor on-time performance. We identify where those issues are and what can be done about them. We do customer surveys, and as part of this process, we're going through an extensive public outreach program, which we can describe later in this presentation. And this is just an example of the continuous process of implementation, monitoring, identification and re-implementation that makes bus services go. To paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, the price of good bus service is eternal vigilance. And we encourage people to continue to work with us on this because this is what we do. Next. Here we go. So this is a summary of all of the routes affected by the proposals that we have. A couple of highlights in the district. There is a proposal to add new bus service along 14th Street Northwest in order to respond to that growing community and introduce a new Metro Extra limited stop service. We have in Maryland a proposal to reroute the B-30, the Airport Express bus, to stop at Arundel Mills Mall and provide a connection to regional providers there as well as the employment and recreation opportunities at that location. And then in Virginia, the main item is a proposal from Arlington County to restructure Columbia Pike bus service in fulfilling their vision of creating a transit-friendly community along Columbia Pike. Go ahead to the next slide. The purpose, as I mentioned, is to add capacity in response to ridership. That's one of the great things about 14th Street. And that proposal is we'll be adding capacity and at the other end of the line, there's a new development called the Waterfront, which is in Southwest. And one of the options in routing that 14th Street bus, which now terminates at LaFont Plaza, is to route it down Main Avenue and 7th Street to be able to tie this new development to the 14th Street corridor of downtown through the use of that line. We continue to look at improving our on-time performance and reliability. The general rule of thumb is that you lose about 1% of your running time every year. And so we have to be constantly adjusting schedules in order to stay current. And then also to more effectively use our resources. So there are some routes that have low ridership. We propose discontinuing them so that we can invest in additional services. One of the highlights in that respect is along Alabama Avenue Southeast, where we propose extending the U8 line up to Minnesota Avenue and extend it all the way to Commerce Heights to provide a new connection across Upper Ward 8 and Lower Ward 7 to improve connectivity and address the crowding issues that we have on the existing services along Alabama Avenue. Next, so the public input process has begun. It began last week. We have, I think it's 30 individual events scheduled where staff will go out to bus stations, train stations, on buses, and meetings to hand out surveys. If you have some of the brochures, you can take the survey online. You can fill it out in hard copy and submit it at a number of different rail stations. And then the final event is an open house and a public hearing here at Jackson Graham Building on Tuesday, September 26th. There will be an open house in this room where my staff will be available to talk to people one-on-one about the proposal and the reasons for and the benefits of and some of the consequences associated with the proposals that we have. And then everybody will be welcome to go next door and have their 3 minutes to give the board a piece of their mind. And it doesn't have to be constrained to just what's on this list. This is an open public hearing about Metrobus, so people can speak about anything that is of interest and concern to them. I would note also that we take public comment seriously, so the proposals that are in the docket and presented online may change as we incorporate ideas and recommendations. And so the final plan that we get presented to the board in hopefully November for final approval may be different than what we have advertised. The goal of the advertisement is to state the widest possible amount of change that people would have to address, and we're allowed to reduce the amount of change or redirect revise the recommendation to reflect the inputs that we've got. It does require taking a look at that final action in November. So this month we're dedicated to gathering input from everybody, and then some of the services would go into effect in December, and some of the service changes would be implemented in June of next year as part of the beginning of fiscal 19. So I believe that is the end of the presentation, and I'm happy to take specific questions about one of the 42 individual proposals.
I have a very selfish question. National Science Foundation is about to move its 20,000 jobs from Boston to Eisenhower Avenue in Alexandria. And the only way to get from Boston to Alabama Avenue in Alexandria is on multiple trains and transfers.
Yes.
Because the blue line, which would be a relatively simple move, doesn't go to the extra two stops. And so I'm going to talk to the rail people about seeing if they want to extend the blue line two stops, or if there's a bus that would be able to short circuit that, because right now you have to go from Boston to Ross Flint, change to blue, and then change to yellow, either Pentagon City or someplace along the line, or go into Longfong Plaza and pick up the yellow to get to Eisenhower. And it would be nice if there were sort of an express bus that went from that area to either Eisenhower or to Churchill to get the yellow line. And, you know, eliminate one of the changes and maybe get there. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to the rail people and maybe do some sort of coordination.
Well, there is Alexandria Transit Service from King Street down into the Carlisle and Eisenhower Avenue,
1887.
Right, the problem is, so, to get to King Street, you already have to change trains.
Yes.
And it's outdoors and whatever. It would be really nice if you get something that would get you someplace where there was an indoor station for the yellow line to, you know, get them out of Eisenhower. It's just a thought. I talked to Mary Hines a couple of years ago about that. Mary said, you know, get the NSF to do something, but, you know, it's feds. They don't do anything. They don't care. But it's an opportunity for Metro to possibly enhance. Certainly on the rail, 20,000 people have to get there, and there's no parking, so they're going to be riding the bus and the rail.
Well, and that's where we work with our local partners. One of the proposals is to extend the terminal of the 29 line, the Duke Street, Little River Turnpike line, down to Eisenhower Avenue, because beginning late this year or early next, the King Street station will go under a reconstruction program. And so we're relocating our buses in the neighborhood. And that's one connection that we think would be a benefit. So it may not be a solution to getting you there from Boston. We can make it a two bus ride instead of a two train ride, but that's about as good as we're going to be able to get.
Great. Thank you.
Doris.
I have some questions, but I do want to say that there is indoor transfer at least four stations from Blue to Yellow. So that is a problem. But what I wanted to, and maybe enhancing those schedules, went out to be a factor. But at any rate, I did want to ask you about the bus service effects of several lines in Northern Virginia. The first being the 4A and 4B. What is the proposal?
The proposal is...
I think you're using your mic or it's far away or something.
Okay, I'll get a little closer. But the proposal is basically that, you know, the 4A and 4B are essentially the same from Park Avenue out to Seven Corners. And the midday ridership on the 4A is very low along Arlington Boulevard. So it's proposed that we would eliminate that and then rely on the 4B, which goes through several of the neighborhoods down Pershing Avenue and eventually to Roslyn. Rely on that as the main busers in the Arlington Boulevard corridor.
And there's a proposal for the 4B as well?
Well, that would be to add additional trips and to serve that purpose.
How frequent?
I think the 4B runs every 30 minutes. Let me introduce Al Hines. He's the manager of service planning, and he can come join me at the table. But you know, the intent would be that the 4B would be a 30-minute frequency, and we'd have the same number of buses, but we wouldn't have service along Arlington Boulevard between Park and...
But you would cut people off, for example, from Thomas Jefferson Community Center, school that's there, and such like that. And I know you're going to say you're going to force them to find about transfers into transferring that new road. That will take forever, given the headway of the various lines back and forth.
Well, with the operation of the two different routes on Lee Road plus the Arlington Transit Service, the connection between the Pershing and Lee intersection and Thomas Jefferson community, for example, is fairly quick. But those are the kind of inputs that we're looking for, is to find out
about it.
And this is one of the trades between efficiency and coverage. But now,
synagogue and Catholic Church, or, cathedral, in fact, and other buildings down there. So now I know what the schedule, what you're thinking about for that. What are you considering doing with the 7A and 7F?
Okay, well, I had the same question for Al last week, so I'm going to let him explain.
Okay, so. So on the 7A and 7F, the proposal is, first of all, the 7A and 7F are the seven lines that run during the off-peak periods or in the off-peak direction. So the trips on the 7W and 7Y that use the HOV into the Pentagon, there's no changes on that peak flow direction in and out of the Pentagon.
Wait a minute, the
7A
have to run all day, peak or not?
Well, during the peak period, the 7A and F patterns only run, in the morning, they only run out of the Pentagon back to Alexandria, or in the afternoon, they only run from Alexandria back into the Pentagon, because the opposite direction, it's a W or a Y. So in the peak period, if you're going to the Pentagon in the morning, you're riding a 7W or a 7Y. And then to come back from the Pentagon in a reverse flow direction, it would be A and F.
Are you telling me there's no service for the neighborhoods during the peak?
Well, the 7W and Y also serve the neighborhoods.
What he's saying is that the routes...
I'm sorry, you don't have the mic on, and I'd like to hear what you're saying.
Sorry, and what I'm saying is that the routes have different names depending on which direction they're going. That's what makes it that route name. So, for most people, traveling along Beauregard or out of Southern Towers or along Walter Reed through South Burlington, there'd be no change. 7Y bus runs at the same frequency that the schedule is today. The 7W, which is serving the western half of that corridor, would come at the same frequency in the AM rush or the PM rush. What Al's talking about is what's called the reverse flow. So in the morning it's the southbound buses, and in the afternoon it's the northbound buses. And middays and weekends, where he would proposed to reroute those buses to go by the Pentagon City Station so that folks would have an option of accessing the train at that location or, for example, we've got a detour coming up because of the Army 10 miler, and so we're going to operate service out of the Pentagon City Station. That means there'd be no change in that route.
I'm really unclear about what you're saying the route would do. My understanding, and maybe it's a wrong understanding, and I use this route all the time, is that you can pick up that bus at Pentagon. It'll take you, it takes you to the Shirley Transit Station. It goes around the neighborhoods. It crosses Route 7. And service is also, Fillmore Avenue and all that, and going to Mark Center, Beauregard, and out to Franconia, Lincolnia, and I am doing that all day.
None of that would change, but some of the trips would
not even the schedule.
And I'd be happy to sit down with you and we could take you on a block by block tour, because I know that route. And so we'd have to go through the intimate details for you to fully understand it.
I'd like to ask a question. I need these adjustments to these routes affect the interactive availability?
No. We're not proposing a reduction of the overall service area. These are changes to routes within the service area, so they would have no effect on natural access.
And going back to the eliminating the 4A, what is your anticipation then for the customer in Fairfax County who use that bus? And that bus serves as an alternative route to get down to Broward, particularly in the peak.
In the peak, 4A would continue to run. Yeah. In the peak hours, the 4A would continue to run, but the 4B would become the primary way to get from Seven Corners down to Roslyn if one were to travel that far. But that's a small number of riders. And so this is about trading off of.
I think that there's a small number of riders because during the weekdays, that bus service runs every hour during the off-peak. And it runs, it doesn't run on weekends. And it's been reduced from that because when I moved there, that bus service was every 20 minutes and every half an hour on Saturday. And now, right now, what I wanted to ask is my question about how you're gathering data, because and making these decisions, do you take into account the reduced bus service and the effect of deterring bus riders from using buses? For example, on a Sunday, if I miss the bus by even 1 minute, or it comes early, or whatever it is, my choice is having to wait 70 minutes to get the next bus. Now, I don't think anyone, including metro access users, would put up time to wait an extra 70 minutes, And it forces me to spend money on taxi cabs, and it forces everyone. There are 1,200 people in my apartment complex, many of whom did use the bus, would use the bus, but since it's been cut back so much, I can't get it. How do you make these decisions? Because I have not seen any surveyors on our buses. It's incredulous. Of course people aren't using it. And we on the Fairfax County side are the ones who are bearing the brunt of these reductions over and over and over again.
Some of these things will be brought up.
All right. Hearings.
The 26th.
That's fine. If that's what we want to leave it at that, so then my question is, how could you make a decision to hold only one hearing at 5:30 in the afternoon, and 6 in the evening, and only one hearing, and reasonably anticipate that people living and working in Arlington, and particularly Fairfax County, will get down here to have their say about the hearings. And what I saw in the hearing announcement is, you don't get there at 6 o'clock, you get in line, you know, as soon as they're finished with the, it's not like the other hearing where, the other hearings last year, where they gave a time frame. But this time, if you're not there, you're as well. So, sorry.
Well, let me answer your two questions and then we can move on. Number one, if we get ridership data for every trip operated on every route at every bus stop, we get boarding and alighting data. So we have a lot of information about where people are getting on.
Sure.
I can't track the individual, but I know the demand and the origins and destinations. And yes, we try very hard to make an informed decision.
How exactly do you basically account that the bus, you know, that you're not, that you may not be getting input because
once
the buses aren't running?
Once you get past certain frequency of service and you're providing a policy to service, policy coverage with frequency at a set rate rather than driven by ridership, then that's, those decisions are made in partnership with the jurisdictions and the budgeting services to be able to provide a balance that meets those local transportation policies. I'm not disagreeing with your characterization. If you have lower frequency services, that does impact the attractiveness and ultimately the demand. But on the other hand, part of the purpose of this is to take service where it's least used and try to put it where it's most used to deal with the constraints within the budgets we have. Now, as far as the public hearing, you know that the board adopted a public participation plan. So the public hearing is no longer the only opportunity people have to participate in this process. They can talk to folks when they're out in the field, they can email us, they can write us. That's why I'm here tonight, is to gather input. So all of this goes into the staff report and the collected information that we then use in partnership with the jurisdiction sponsors to reach final decisions and recommendations. And so if you sign up to speak at the hearing and you're not going to be there until a little bit later, we'll hang around, we'll stick around until you're ready. We're in no way trying to restrict folks from being able to participate, and if you have a particular community meeting you'd like for us to come in to speak to, we would be happy to do that. In fact, I believe Arlington's going to host a meeting on Columbia Pike on the 21st to have a meeting locally. Now, that won't be our sponsored meeting, that'll be Arlington County's, but nevertheless, it gives people an opportunity to participate in the final process.
But what are you going to hear about? The Fairfax County residents, where is there going to be, any re-rallying of the 29 affects Fairfax County residents, and so I'm good, and some of them affect maybe Alexandria residents, and so on. Really, what I don't understand is why there aren't at least, jurisdictional, the three jurisdictions having hearings, and why the hearing is so early rather than, not just for me, but for anybody who's working for Pete's sake and needs to get it.
Now, the starting time was intended to make it convenient for folks who are already downtown to come by, and we're run late enough in the night that anybody that wants to come will be able to participate.
We're running over.
No.
Okay. Next on the agenda. Thank you, Mr. Hanley.
All right. Thank you all for your comments. I look forward to your input and possibly seeing some of your public hearings.
Okay. Next on the agenda is a presentation of trip planner voice application. Barbara Holm, the senior director. Department of Customer Service, Communication and Marketing, and Scott Pacino.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Can you hear me?
A little
close.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, almost me on top.
Talk a little bit more so that I know it's coming.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Test.
Okay.
Well, thank you. We're excited to hear that you wanted to us to visit again. So I think it was about almost a year and a half I had come originally. I'm here today with Scott Christina, who's been here almost a year, here in December. And he handles the day-to-day operations in the call center. And I thought, I know folks have had a wonderful presentation from Jim. I'd like to look at this more as a conversation about the IVR system. And I'll share with some big picture factoids, for the lack of a better word, just to share with you. We're so happy that we actually have this system because we take in about 2 million calls a year into the center. Customers, visitors, commuters looking for information. About half of that is handled, thank God, with that automated system, the voice recognition system. As many of you may know, earlier this year, as part of the cost-saving measure, we did have to lay off some people. So while we had almost about 40 live reps, now we have about 30 reps. And so you can see that there's a dependency on the information that we provide through the IVR system. I told Ms. Moore that this was timely conversation because we are looking at, because the system is old, it's about 7 years old. In a technology world, that's old. We're looking to purchase a new system, and we're putting together a RFI, a request for information. And so we're asking the market for kind of the best in class, what kind of new offerings do people have. I can say that with regard to the system we have now, about 54% of the calls that use the system, the automated voice system, 45% are looking for bus information, real-time bus information. Then that's followed by about 5% are looking for trip planning information. 7% are really looking for the scheduled next bus. And then only about 2% are looking for rail information. We've got a lot of kind of, I want to say, outlying inquiries that come through, equaling about 30% of the balance of that. So, that said, I certainly will take questions. Scott, free to answer anything more specific. I just wanted to really have a conversation and listen, actually, to what you need, what you want with regard to the system. Sure.
My largest problem with the system is out on the street corner, trying to find out what's going on, is listening to all of the preamble before I actually get to the point where I can ask the question. Particularly with traffic going around, usually what happens is by the time I get to ask the question, there's so much noise from the traffic that I can't hear the answer. And that's my problem for not having a headset, but there's a long preamble before I can actually put in the stop number and, you know, say what I'm gonna do.
Gotcha.
Sorry. Can anyone hear me
okay?
Okay. I just wanted to follow up with what you're saying. You're right, I think there are a lot of prompts on there, or you're calling a preamble. To Barbara's point, we are looking at minimizing some of that going forward, so you won't have to listen to as much preamble, which you like to say. And as far as not being able to repeat that answer, that would be something we would like to implement upon the new IVR as well. So those are very valid. So thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
Sure.
One second. Doris?
I use the IVR all the time, and it's extremely important to my life, especially because I travel throughout Northern Virginia, and it's bus service, bus service, bus service, right? And so, and frequently, I'll be going somewhere, and I, if I go to a meeting and I'm going to check out schedules for when I can leave, when the meeting goes over, goes under, whatever it is. So check out schedule arrival time is extremely important to my life, both work and personal. And but equally so are the customer service reps. And I want to say, in the main, I want to tell you the customer service reps in the main are extremely good. So, and I think that that service has improved, and it's so very important that it goes beyond what the RVR can do and what a computer can do. But anyway, recently, and repeatedly, I have seen problems with I've experienced it out on the road with the noise, and I'm patient with that, but I've experienced problems with the IVR and basically the voice recognition not working, and not working on the weekends and on holidays when I can't get to a customer service representative. And when I'm trying to use the IVR, or like on Saturdays when I'm trying to use the IVR and it is open, or Sundays, and I want to use the IVR rather than taking up the time of the customer service representative. But it is breaking down. And I realize that you may come back to me and say, well, that's why we know we need to get a new one, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, the constant breaking down, particularly like it happened on Labor Day, for example, I couldn't get anybody. And
when you say it's breaking down, and I don't want this to sound like a dumb question, do you mean it's just not functioning, or it doesn't account for the, you know, holiday closures or things of that nature?
No, I mean, it from the very beginning of the call, I may say trip planning, and it'll hear that. And then from that point on, it doesn't recognize me. It doesn't recognize the words that I'm saying.
Okay. Yes.
Or I'll be right in the middle of the call, and it'll break down. You know, before I get the information that I need. And it is happening on a regular basis.
Okay.
So I hope that you will check into that.
We will.
And the other thing that I want to say is it's kind of frustrating. I've had the experience the Dr. Scherzer has had, and I'm a patient then, because there's maybe a ways around. But one of the things that's frustrating that I think we've mentioned up the line on a listening is that when you call in to get, I use it mostly for scheduled arrival. I would like to use it for next bus information, but it's inaccessible. I'll tell you why really quick. But the thing about unscheduled arrival times, let me understand.
Well,
I mean, see, okay, so scheduled arrival time doesn't provide you with, I'm not sure that I would want to see a lessening of the information, because right now you can get the system to jump to the next question. So I've done that before. But once you get to the next bus scheduled arrival time, it's not clear by the text and instructions, and also the system just doesn't have the recognizes command to let you know next scheduled arrival time or previous scheduled arrival time. You know, it makes you go through a whole routine and that's bad. I think that should be cleaned up. But also, I want to vote for putting in the budget for more customer service representatives, because they're really necessary. And then the last thing is that I hope that you will get together a committee of people who use it, and people with disabilities, people without disabilities, and particularly people who are blind and vision impaired, who rely on it out there because we can't read next to us information, and because the stop signs and bus stops do not provide capital or arch print that is at a height that one can use to get to be able to have the number. So I have to call in the customer information anyway whenever that happens to find out whether the bus is late or I missed it or whatever. Thank you, Doris.
Thank you, Doris. I think I'll just add on that. I think your comments were substantive, and we can certainly go back as we put together this RFI and deal with vendors and actually check into the system ourselves on that. One thing I would add is that we are looking to have a group, as you say, test, and we'll make sure, I'll circle back with Ms. Moore to make sure we have this community represented as we try to scope out our specific needs as it relates to the accessibility community. So look forward to that invite.
Next comment from Mr. Torres.
Yes, this is Mr. Torres speaking for an interpreter. So I understand the reliability on the auditory system. I'm thinking of accessibility options for deaf people. Certainly calling on a phone is an option through Relay, but I wonder too about an app that would explain exactly the arrival time. It's not always so smooth, that app. There's MoveIt. That's an app that seems to give me kind of accurate information. And I know that Dr. Posner had mentioned about the DC Rider app. So I wonder, I haven't tried this, but I'm just thinking about in terms of like accessibility for deaf people, are they user friendly, and how that might work, if there's a particular, like certain particular additions that might be appropriate, if you ever do surveys to figure out what might work best for the deaf community.
Thank you. That's a excellent point. Scott, you want to add?
Oh, sorry. I know there's a couple apps I use that are very good. DC Metro. And it's, you know, basically a blue black brown with a big white M, and then another one's Metro Hero.
As you know, we don't have our own WMATA Metro app per se. We're kind of at the whim of the developers who have developed multitudes. So we don't endorse any particular app, but I think you bring up, Mr. Torres, some great information in terms of when we're talking to the vendors regarding what we want in a high VR to understand the integration perhaps with some apps and to understand if there's an opportunity there.
Mr. Adderley.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Mr. Schmidt.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Can you tell me, when is the RFI due to go
on? Request for information. That's when, it's for a new IVR system. We put a kind of a wish list together of everything that we'd like to have, and also, you know, goes out to the various technology vendors.
Right. Do you have a date as to when the RFI will be going out?
Not specific date. We've gone through our first round of edits, and I think within the next 30 to 45 days, it will hit the street.
So how can this committee get Bus Rail or even AAC as a whole get suggestions in to assist with making sure the RFI reflects accessibility issues?
And functionality.
Yeah, well, this is what this meeting was about. I've scribed down the things that you've mentioned thus far. If you'd like to take another bite of the apple and send it to Ms. Moore, she can send it back to us so we have, like I said, 30 to 45 days to incorporate the wish list of functionality. Many things, I should say, some accessibility language has already been incorporated in the ask. Now, if there's something that we can add, we certainly will. I didn't want you to think that it's already gone and we've already put this together without even an inclusion of the accessibility community. But if you can help, this is great. This is why we're having this meeting. So I look forward to getting kind of a punch list of additional things that might be helpful for you.
And more specifics would come out during the RFP process. For now, this is kind of what the vendors are telling us, so to speak, what they can offer us. Because our system is so old, they're far more sophisticated now, and we have put in some wording for accessibility, but really when we get to the RFP is where you would get very specific with what it needs to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So I wouldn't be concerned that you're going to miss out, because you're not.
I understand the difference between RFI and RFP, but I know that once things are in RFP, there's very little chance for us to have
correct
input into the technical requirements going in. So I think it would be great if we could get maybe word out to the committee as a whole to say that the RFI is going to be going out in the next 30 to 45 days. We still have time to get in a wish list of technical requirements that we would like to see in the process.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll make sure an email goes out to the committee asking people to respond and a date to respond for the last piece of information customers want to provide.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We've worked with you.
Next is the PR Bus Rail Administrative Process Discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to let members know within their packet, they have descriptions for the positions already included in your packet. Also, along in your packet is the, if you haven't completed it already, you still need to do the confidentiality statement and financial interest form. Some members have given me theirs and some are still out, so please make sure you complete that information. As always, if members need assistance with it, all they need to do is just let me know. I'll be more than happy to help them or find someone to assist them. Also, I wanted to share, included in your packet is a calendar, so you'll have that just in case members want to add it to the refrigerator to let them know that when the next meeting and so forth is coming up. We're talking about appointments for the BR subcommittee, and at the last AAC, we had two members that were nominated, and I'm just opening the floor to make sure if there's any more nominations. Now, this particular nomination won't be confirmed until after the new group for the AAC takes place, which would be in October. So, but we just wanted to make sure that members know that the floor is open. Some members also have chosen to email me, which is perfectly fine, but I just wanted to let members know the floor is open if there's anybody that wants to put forth any more information about appointments for the BRS. Seeing none, okay, we'll move to work plan. We have, yes.
You want to remind everybody of the head of the shirt foundation's outside?
On Monday?
Okay, I'll talk about this. That's a really excellent award. I just don't want to forget work plans, because the other day it was just busy, so we kind of cut it. But the Accessibility Excellence Award is going to be on November the 2nd. Applications are out there. Everyone should be sharing it with their community and looking for someone that we can actually put forth as a person for the Hettinger Award. It can be a business or an organization or a person that instills in them the service to transportation in the disability community in this region. And so our office, Office of ADA Policy and Planning, has reached out to a number of organizations and people, but of course we still need the assistance of the committee. So please take an application, familiarize yourself with it, and think of exactly who you would like to nominate or should be nominated to receive this award. It's an award given by the members of the disability community, so we want to make sure we have the community's input. The Accessibility Excellence Award will be held in this room on November the 2nd. And so naturally, as in the past, all members are invited to participate. Also on the table outside, please don't forget, they do have information about the public hearing. So it is listed there, just in case anybody wants a hard copy of the information. We did email it out, but I just want to make sure if you need a hard copy, the information is there. The last piece is the work plans. I want to just ask members about ideas for the work plan for the bus and rail subcommittee. We do have an elevator maintenance coming up, and Elver, I did hear your comments earlier, so I'll follow up with them, but are there any more questions or comments for the work plan? Yes, Bill.
Priority seating on 7,000 series cars. We are still fighting to get the wheelchair parking spaces moved to the end of the cars rather than the middle doors. I had a negative experience last week on the committee when a woman in a hand wheelchair, which is unusual at this point, got on and couldn't move and was trapped in the door because it was rush hour and everybody was standing in the middle doors along with their suitcases and their baby carriages and everything else. And fortunately, there was a Metro policeman there who cleared the area and managed to get her there. So I think I'd like to continue that movement. The other thing is, on the 7000 series, they now have benches at either end of the car. And it would be nice to have additional priority seating on those benches, at least one seat at either end of the car. Because having the wheelchair parking spot in the middle doors now only have the two priority seatings, and they don't have the real seating that nice people would get up and give you that seat if the priority seats were taken. And so the idea of putting in an extra priority seat at either end of the 7000 series cars might be something that we work on.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Patrick and then Elmer.
Thank you, Bean. Two things that I'd like to see us getting regular reports on at the bus rail subcommittee would be where we are with respect to the lighting project, so getting someone from WMATA to be giving us a fairly regular update, maybe every 3 months or 4 months, on where we are with lighting, and then also where we are with accessible bus stops and the progress being made, you know, amongst the jurisdictions, and perhaps how this committee can move forward with reporting and encouraging jurisdictions to make that a priority, both the lighting within the stations and also the accessible bus stops.
Yes, sir. Elver?
Thank you, Ms. Bean. As a follow-up to Mr. Philip's comment of the priority seating, if those changes are going to happen with the 7000 series, I would love to ask or request or beg, please, that the seats be high enough So people with difficulty getting out of their seats can really, really get out without any problem, and or seniors, and I mean, so many people will benefit. Just keep in mind that any changes or suggestions that we do make on behalf of people with disabilities benefit everyone, able, not able body, and they really enjoy it. So those seats need to be high enough, so when we get out of those seats, are not going to be any issue. Thank you.
Okay. Herbert, then Doris, and then Charlie.
Felipa.
Oh, I'm sorry, Felipa. I so missed you. I apologize. Thank you. Absolutely. Right after Charlie. Yes, sir.
Oh, this may have been covered in the past, but what consideration is given to luggage? Because I came back Saturday on Amtrak and was on three different subway lines, and I had my suitcase. And I go to the center of the car, and, you know, I'm taking up space where wheelchairs should be, where people with disabilities should be sitting, and with the silver animal line guy, so, you know, believe me, I see the luggage going to National a lot, but with the silver line opening, Metro's going to need to address the, you know, luggage issues and accessibility, well, just traffic flow inside a Metro car, because it's opening to Dallas shortly. And the problem's just going to get worse for any of us wanting to get us, you know, to navigate in the car around the luggage. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Doris?
I was thinking that, I knew Mr. Sheehan regarding the lighting. I was also thinking, with regard to reviewing, perhaps providing some of these things about the 7,000 series cars and providing a full scale review as we're bringing those cars on. One of the things that I wanted to point out is that the foot level of the lights at the doors of the 7,000 series car are absolutely blinding in terms of working out contracts so that you know where to get onto the car. And it has to do with the high intensity fluorescent kind of lighting. And then I also wanted to note that frequently, I think I mentioned this in another meeting, but I'd like on the agenda frequently now, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I have been at a transfer station like Roslyn, trains come through, and because of the way the new 7000 series window signs are, you can't necessarily distinguish the colors of the lines, and that is actually, you know, the train line. So I have gotten on the silver train, meaning to get on the blue trains, and if you will note that the orange is no longer as bright orange as the older train windows, sign windows, and the blue, the silver is just hard to distinguish in certain circumstances from the blue. And sometimes, actually recently, the train, because I've asked other people, the train signs in the window were absolutely wrong. He was on the wrong train, and the announcements weren't working. And there's some issues with the presentation.
So we're talking about train signage. Is that the one? Do you have any more doors?
Yeah, I was about to say there are issues with the presentation of the announcements. Automated announcements on 7,000 series cars because they aren't, they're announcing doors opening and closing, and sometimes they don't get through to which train it is.
Okay.
So there are problems. I think that there's something that me, from what I've seen, that the drivers may be doing that are cutting off some of those announcements.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Charlie?
Yes, thank you. Again, on behalf of my wife, it's important that the announcement of whether it's a 6 or 8 car train as it comes into the station is important for those folks who have to position themselves where they know they can get on the train easily.
Yeah, we'll put that under announcements. Philippa?
Hi, Philippa Lizelle, Washington, D.C. I brought this up earlier in the summer that my goal was to get the station ahead signage back on the pylon on the platform, because a lot of the signs are now on the wall, beyond the retaining wall, or on a electronic board above a 6'4" commercial board. So, I mean, they don't have to take those out, and I would like to get them back on. But what I'm asking is, most of my travel is inside the confines of the district, so I'm asking committee members to kind of pay attention to what you see maybe in Maryland and Virginia and give it to me, and I will compile the entire report. Thank you.
Yeah, along with the signage, I would add on the signage that points to elevators and escalators. It would be nice to know if it was the elevator going in which direction or the other direction, since there are other ends of the station. Mm-hmm. Particularly Metro Center, if you know which one you're going to get on, wind up on the right side or the wrong side.
Mary Kay and then Patrick.
Thank you.
And I didn't write down which line this was, but I just recently, with the wraparound ads around the bus, noticed that at least on one bus, it was covering the sign on the side of the bus saying what line it was.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, thank you for sharing that. Do you remember the bus line?
I'm sorry, I don't. I was so surprised to see something covering what the line of the bus was that I didn't catch it before it went by.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Patrick?
And B, I know it was brought up at the AAC meeting, but it was mentioned, I think, by Carolyn, that we wanted to talk about whiteboards and the status of the whiteboards within the system.
Yes, sir. I have it on listed. Anyone else have any comments in regards to or?
I'm not sure where this should go, but it might go under the bus rail. That when we're talking about accessibility of bus stops, an incident happened to me last week that really concerns me. It has to do with the placement of crosswalk, you know, demand crosswalk buttons so that they are accessible and both to a blind person, as well as certainly to somebody with a vision impairment, I mean, with a physical disability. And I think this is the case. I think we need to talk about that kind of thing in for bus stops that are out on the line in places like Fairfax County, Montgomery County, PG, where they're using highways for bus routes. Because what happened to me is that I got home in the evening, and they placed the crosswalk button down in a ditch, and over the summer foliage was grown up. This has happened before, but it was dark, and I even used my cane to try to find it. I couldn't find it, and I knew it. If I leaned over any more, I would fall in the ditch, and this was a bus on the weekend where the next bus was going to be 60 or 70 minutes away, and I was just petrified because it was Route 50. There were six big lanes of traffic, and I wasn't able to turn this thing, and I solved it by having a cab. But I was frightened for a while, and I think we need to talk about experiences like that and how that drives people off bus and onto Metro Access.
Wonderful. Thank you, Doris. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Or one more. Since we're talking about bus announcements, and the automated bus announcements, we talked about this a couple of years ago, that when they closed metro stations at one end,
for the weekends and after hours. The buses still make the announcement that this stop is for the particular metro stop. There is no metro stop there. And so you kind of get off and you're lost.
Okay. I'll definitely put that as our main announcement. Also, Mr. Chair, I wanted to yield my time to Elbert to talk about the AAC travel initiative.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. As you might know, the travel initiative project is coming around. Ms. Lee and along with Mr. Patrick have been very supportive in getting this project more solid at this point. We hope that we are going to give more details through email, but we are expecting maybe that there are more answers from the Metro board members. So far, we have only four board members that are going to ride with four different AAC board members. We are working on getting the match in terms of who's going to ride with whom, and secondly, upon agreement to facilitate the schedule and the day details about that event. I'm not sure if I should say something else, Ms. Lee or Mr. Patrick, please.
What we're interested also in putting together is once we have tracked and once we have matched riders with board members, we're very interested in what we are going to be putting together as far as outcomes for this particular project. The point of the rides and many in our most situations here is that we have education that we want to give, a point that we want to provide because we want to see a certain outcome achieved. And so we will be working with our riders, their routes, in order to understand where they travel, what challenges they have, and what the outcomes that the bus rail, particularly bus rail, and perhaps, you know, not as much metro access, but the fixed route system can provide, so we can make sure that those outcomes become things that are achievable within the next year or so.
As an addition to that, this is going to be happening in October, and it could be first or second week. No, I don't think so, first week, but second or third week of October. And again, we have to really work on the schedule and the matching trips and between the AAC board member with the Metro board member. We do hope that we can have more Metro board members responding. We are still waiting, but so far we have four board members confirmed confirmation. And we are going to have our AAC meeting first Monday of October, but I think that we anticipate to send an email specifically about the travel initiative for each one of the AAC board members so you can have a better idea. If we wait until that Monday, it will be too short notice. So we are working on that and getting to you as soon as possible.
Thank you. All right.
So I'm
Yes, Doris, this is the members will be matched with board members of your jurisdiction and your service that you ride. So the board members who have agreed to participate are Christian Dorsey, Catherine Hudgens, Catherine Porter, and it's the GM. So those are the four individuals who have agreed to ride. So, we've asked the entire board, Metro, and the executive staff. And those are the members that have come forth and have agreed to participate.
So what I was going to ask you, for example, if there was you know, any issue and somehow it comes forward that maybe a member of the AAC from that jurisdiction could ask or could work together with the, if it be appropriate with the Disability Commission member, except chair of that jurisdiction, to perhaps make a contact with that member.
At the moment, there's continued outreach to all board members as well as executive staff, and by the end of the month, we'll have an update, and if there's a determination at that point that a more direct push will be required, we will strategize as to the best way to get higher participation if that is not realized at the time.
Now, may I go to Mr. Torres, please, then Mr. Phillip, and Mr. Herbert at the end. Mr. Torres, please.
Yes, earlier you mentioned announcements either on bus or rail. I would also like to think about accessibility for deaf and hard of hearing individuals when we consider that. So, for example, when you mentioned arriving, you know, this bus is next, this train is next, do we have that information accessible if you're deaf and hard of hearing? And the other thing I wanted to add was, in regard to buses, you said that the metro station, it will announce that the metro station is closed. That would be an even worse or dire situation for somebody who's deaf, because if you get off the bus and you don't know that the metro station is closed, it may be a situation where we're left stranded. So anytime that you think of any announcements, we have to think to make sure that we have access for them visually somehow. Yeah. And also, I'm not sure if there's some kind of sign or ID that we can say, you know, if you can apply for an ID and it's expired, I think in 5 years, right? The Metro ID expires. So if people have asked me to go and get proof for disability, I think that it's, we can't go back and change our disability as a deaf person. So I was wondering if there was a way that we could change the requirement for doctor's approval or recommendation for the basis of our disability from a doctor. The deaf community thinks that it's ridiculous to have to go to an audiologist and get an audiogram when our hearing doesn't change. So I was just wondering how we would pass that information along to you.
This is Chris from Office of Eligibility. I can only add that we do have to continue periodic reassessment for all of those programs just for consistency's sake. With that said, for customers who are deaf or hard of hearing, we do require an audiogram, but I don't think we still have a limit on how old that audiogram can be, so just present that again and we can recertify you as appropriate.
My understanding, and this was a while ago, it would just say permanent, but then it changed and it expires more soon. So if you could just check into that and consider it.
Well, let's clarify, what is he saying expires? Is eligibility or the results of the
the eligibility for the ID.
Correct, that is correct, yes. So there is an expiration date for Metro Access and Reduced Fare Program eligibility, and that's what Mr. Colbert is saying. We're going to likely continue that process. But what he's saying is that in addition to getting just the doctor's signature on application, you may not need a new test.
Okay. So the historical information is there, so a new test is not necessary.
At this point, correct.
Jim, was a comment, Mr. Trier.
Just close the two one.
You're ahead.
Yeah, it's just a question. If we sign up to go on a ride with
the board members. Should we rise?
Phil, can you turn to one thing? Oh, it looks like we have one more follow-up question from Mr. Torres. I'm sorry.
Doris.
Okay.
When was the change for Beauty and Audiogram changed? Because I have several friends who said that they needed one.
So you can, and this has always been the policy that it's either or. You can present either an audiogram or have your doctor complete an application. If you're deaf or hard of hearing, you can use either one of those two options in order to certify or recertify.
Right, I understand that. That's the first time of application that's needed. That makes absolute sense to me. But once you're getting eligible again, we have to go to the doctor again and get justification. Has that changed?
No, that is still true. But again, it's either that or an audiogram. So what I was saying before is if you have an audiogram, if you presented an audiogram before, you could potentially use that same audiogram to reapply again. And I know that does seem kind of silly and redundant, but we have to be consistent with making sure that all of our customers are reapplying for the service when that eligibility comes up to expire.
I'm just a little confused. I just want to be clear. I probably should have stayed out of it. We're not asking for a new audiogram, but in 3 years when Mr. Torres, or 5 years when Mr. Torres' Metro Access eligibility expires, the doctor still has to sign the new application. Yes or no?
If he does not have the audiogram to present, then yes. If he has the audiogram, his doctor does not need to fill out the application.
Oh, okay.
That is stated on the application.
Gotcha. Well, we're clarifying because Mr. Chairman, we really have to wrap up.
Why don't we just add this to the work plan to have a presentation, and so therefore we can just talk about it more in depth.
Mine is a quick question.
Okay, 30 seconds.
But we're still on the floor and on the topic about the AAC travel initiative.
Oh, that's right. No, this is just about what was just asked. I want to know whether, and I have a hearing impairment, okay, but I also blind, and this is put it by the what I want to ask is, What's the question about certification, recertification for Metro Access, or was it about eligibility and certification for a discount card for fixed route, given this is a bus rail meeting? Because if it is for that, is it the rule different, or is it not different? I didn't know it expired for the discount card, although I think I've heard people.
Okay. We have a question, let them answer, please.
Yes. The question was about the discount card. I don't have any idea about Metro Access.
So your answer you're giving have to do with Metro Access?
No, that was not true. The answer that we gave was in reference to the reduced fare program.
Okay, so as a blind person, I have to go to an ophthalmologist after 3 years.
It's a 5-year eligibility, first of all. Secondly, your ophthalmologist could fill out the application to recertify, but any licensed medical professional could fill out the application. So your general practitioner could also do that as well.
Okay.
Seniors are eligible for the Senior Smart Trip program once they turn 65.
And then do they have to
restart? No, the answer is no.
That's it. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
I never renewed because I became a senior. They told me not to come back.
All right, last question.
I'm sorry.
That experienced writers. And the reason I say that is I have suffered not knowing where the escalators and elevators are, but over the 10 years I've written, I'm a really easy ride right now, because when I go to Union Station, I know to get in the first car, and that's where the elevator and the escalator is. When I first moved here, I used to get in the middle car, and the elevators in the middle of the platform never work. And so I also know where to stand when the cars are going to come in at the various stations. And so if I am an experienced rider riding with one of the board members, I'm going to think it's really easy. Whereas if I'm riding as though I were a first-time rider, they'd see what the problem was. And so I'm just asking, I'm happy to volunteer because I ride with Christian Percy all the time. And, you know, I'm happy to show them the hard way.
Well, I have two answers. I have two quick answers for you, Mr. Philip. One is that the Travel Initiative project is for to show the Metro board members to have an idea how people with disabilities can just ride every day to go where they need to go, either work, school, etc. We are focused in getting the AAC board members to ride with one of the board members. We would love to have everyone ride with each one of the board members. Unfortunately, that is not going to happen. We only have four answers, and we are about 15 AAC board members. So the idea is to go by jurisdiction and to match one of the AAC members based on their daily routine they would choose. But again, we are in the process right now. As Mr. Patrick says, for we have to be clear about the outcome of this. It is not only, let's go and ride. We want to really be focused on what is the purpose of doing this, to show the impact within several outcomes. And I think that if there is any AAC board member who is new riding the fixed route, it would be also work. Again, it depends on the daily routine. If, for instance, for myself, it is really challenging to ride rush hour with my scooter, two lines of the metro and one bus. It is really a nightmare. I have to do it. So if I am going to be one of those riders that I'm going to ride with a board member, I would like to show this board member that. But maybe another board member, AAC board member, would have different things. But we were going to share more in detail through email and also in our next meeting.
So Phil, give me a holler, because in your case, what we are most interested in are outcomes. And you can help us to clarify that with you riding with person X, that we can achieve the outcome that the AAC needs. And that's really where it's most valuable.
I can twist the arm of my good friend Paul Smedberg, who is the Alexandria rep on the WMATA board. If we have an outcome that somebody wants me to show him the light, how hard it is to get from Boston International Science Foundation, because that's an Alexandria issue. I know Christian, you know Christian Dorsey. You know, if you and I, you know, and that if that's an outcome, you know, I'll twist Paul's arm. That there needs to be
what's on there. It's all about outcomes.
Yeah.
What's that? To a journal again, right? To a journal.
So moved. Seconded.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.
Great in here. Thank you. I know the most member. You know Christian Dorsey.
Okay. Yeah. I get it.